Well, good afternoon, American Warrior listeners, those of you in Tucson and those of you listening around the globe via the live stream on the podcast. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We've got a very interesting show today. We've got two guests, one in studio and one on the phone, and we're going to be talking about desert and lightning, thunder, desert, thunder, thunder and lightning over Arizona. That's live radio, folks. What can I say? And if they're called, we're start off with our guest who's calling in from Luke Air Force Base. They are called fifth-generation fighters. They're the most advanced aircraft in the world, flying in the world today. Coming up in early March, you will see two of these aircraft over the skies of Tucson, the F-22 Raptor and the F-35 Lightning. Now, if you've been in Tucson any length of time, you know we've had quite a bit of discussion about the F-35, so we're going to get it directly from the horse's, or in this case, the derail's mouth, and start with our very first guest calling in from Luke Air Force Base, Major William Derail Andriotta, the F-35 Heritage Flight pilot. Bill, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hi, Ben. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, let me just start off. Are you any relation to Glenn Andriotta?
I am not.
Okay. Have you heard that before? You get that question?
I've heard that once or twice before, but nope, I am in no relation.
Okay. For our listeners who are not familiar with history, Glenn was actually one of the heroes of the My Lai situation back in Vietnam. So anyway, Major, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you've only got a brief amount of time. Let's kind of back up a little bit, though. How did you come to join the Air Force, and what other sort of aircraft have you flown before getting into the cockpit of an F-35?
You know, I think like a lot of people that have served our country before, family was a big thing for me. My grandfather was a three-war vet. My father is an Army vet as well. He's a West Point graduate, class of 1974. So they've always instilled something in me that serving our country and doing something bigger than yourself is a noble cause. So really going into the military was a no-brainer for me. How I ended up getting into the Air Force, I kind of think of it, I've always had a kind of a love for mechanical, everything mechanical, planes, and that really steered me into the Air Force. In terms of what I've flown, I did the training pipeline that we always do, starting with T-6s, T-38s, and then I spent a good amount of my career so far, 8 years, flying the F-16 until I transferred over to the F-35.
Now, Major, are most the F-35 pilots coming out of F-16s?
You know, it's actually a split. It is an even keel split along all fighter groups. We have every fighter represented at Luke Air Force Base, from F-22, A-10, F-15Es, Strike Eagles, F-15C, and F-16s, of course. So it's an even split across the board.
Okay, now, Major, I'll give you early warning. I ask one or two dumb questions every interview. So just in case Lieutenant Sidney Smith from the Public Affairs Office from DM is sitting right next to me, so she'll smack me if I get too out of line. But let's continue with the basics. The Luke Air Force Base is the principal training wing now for the F-35 pilots, correct?
That is absolutely true.
And you were training not just United States Air Force pilots, but we also have some of our partner nations training there as well, don't we? Who are some of the other nations?
So the actual F-35 program is really a coalition of partner nations. And right now at Luke, we have Australia, Italy, and Norway. They're all represented, and they all have pilots that are stationed at Luke Air Force Base.
Okay, what, anybody else coming up? Are the Brits, I mean, do you expect having other nations come in further down the line, or is that remain to be seen?
Nope, we will have other nations coming online, and it all depends on what variants. So there's three variants of the F-35, so it really all depends on what variants the country is buying as to where they'll go train and who they'll train with. We are the A model, so the F-35A, so we are basically training all the countries that are buying the A model. So pretty soon we have Turkey coming online, and then we'll have a couple more funneling down the road.
Now, when you talk about the different variants, sir, are you talking about the Air Force variant and then the vertical takeoff or vertical landing variant for the Marines and the Navy variant, or are you talking variants within Air Force type use?
Nope. So the Air Force has one type of use for it. It's the F-35A, and I am talking about the different variants between the A model, the B model, and the C model. The B model is the Marine Corps version. The C model is the Navy version. Easy to remember. If you just think of carrier, then you can think of C models for the Navy.
Okay. Now, sir, what would you say is the main difference in training? I mean, this aircraft is literally, I hate to borrow the phrase, light years, if you will, ahead of some of the other aircraft. Is there something significantly different in the training for F-35 pilots that there wasn't perhaps F-16s or F-18s or some of the other aircraft? Is there more simulator time, for example?
There is absolutely more simulator time, and then there's a lot of stuff devoted in flight that we just can't do for other weapon systems such as F-16s at Luke, just because they don't have the sensors that we have, although the F-16s are very capable jets. So we do spend a lot of time in the simulators. Simulators these days the technology in these simulators is far beyond what we used to have back when I started in 2004 flying the F-16. So there is a lot of simulator time, and then there's actually a lot of stuff simulated that we can simulate in the jet itself when we get airborne to help us get the training that we need.
Well, now, I tell you, sir, if you ever need someone to evaluate that, I've got probably, 4,000 hours in an F-22 simulator.
Do you really?
On my little computer at home.
Man, look at that. You're not the first person. There's a lot of people out there that actually have a lot of time on their personal computers. More time than I have in any of these simulators.
If you all ever need me to come up and sort of test the software, I'm happy to do so.
Well, you know, I'll keep that in mind. I'll keep you on my speed dial on my phone.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined on the phone by Major William Andriotta, who is the F-35 Heritage Flight Pilot. We'll be coming down to Tucson to fly the F-35 over the skies of Tucson. Also in studio, Lieutenant Sidney Smith, who's going to be talking about the air shows and some other exciting stuff coming up here. Hey, stick around. We'll be right back after these messages.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here in American Warrior. We're joined on the phone by Major William Andriotta, who is the F-35 Heritage Flight Pilot. He'll be flying his aircraft over the skies of Tucson coming up in early March. And also in studio, Lieutenant Sidney Smith, who is the Public Affairs Officer at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. She's going to tell us a little more about some of the cool stuff the Air Force has coming up for us here in Tucson in the next couple of weeks. Major, back to you. The F-35... You know, basically, we're only going to talk about stuff here in the public domain, but even that is pretty amazing stuff. What is, if you can, the Reader's Digest version, what is the mission of this aircraft once it – now, you're operational, but are you combat ready yet? Are the Air Force F-35s combat ready yet?
We're still currently in developmental test, and okay. We're looking probably sometime this year to become operational capable, meaning we are combat capable. But you're absolutely correct. The capabilities that the F-35 has is light years ahead of anything in the world. Our main mission is going to be just like every other plane out there. We're going to be air to air and we're going to be air to ground. But the places we can go, the things we can see, the things we can do in this aircraft are really what separates it. We can go into places that other fourth generation or legacy aircraft just can't even get to because of the threats that are out there. And those threats are both air to air and air to ground. And a lot of times our job could be to go in there and hopefully open up areas where we can send a lot of the other aircraft that we have to go in there and do their job. So it's really a complement of all aircraft systems out there. But you are exactly right. The capabilities of this plane are above and beyond what anyone can even imagine.
Now, sir, if I may, the F-22 has performed at the Heritage Conference the last couple of years. The first time I saw that aircraft fly, I'm looking for the wires and the strings. It was doing things that aircraft are not supposed to be able to do, traditional fixed-winged aircraft, and I'm guessing that's because of the vectored thrust. Is the F-35 designed similarly, or does it not have vectored thrust?
The F-35 does not have vectored thrust, but our capabilities are, in terms of maneuverability that the F-35 has, are comparable to any basically fighter aircraft that we have in the inventory right now.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something you hear raised about the F-35 in certain corners. I talked to the F-22 pilot, and I said, well, that's really cool, maneuverability. He says, no, but you're not getting it. The whole point is you never want to have to use that. We want to get the bad guys before they ever see us or before we ever see them. So that's really also one of the keys of the F-35, correct, is you're going to be engaging them before they even know you were there.
Absolutely. This plane, like I said before, it can maneuver with any plane out there. It's very comparable, but it is optimized for our avionics and our stealth. And we are hoping by the time that we even get, that they will never even know we're there. And that is really the great part about this plane is how it just, you're able to see stuff before anybody else can really even see you.
Now, so you're traveling at Mach 1.6 if you need to, which is pretty darn fast.
It is. It is pretty darn fast.
Can you give us a sense, sir, for those of us civilians, so at Mach 1.6, how long would it take me to get from Phoenix to Tucson?
It would probably take 5 minutes at that.
I got to get me one of those.
I know. It's a good way to travel. It's not a bad way to travel.
And your weapons, so the other unique thing, you mentioned the stealth of the aircraft. One of the reasons for that is Prince, generally on missions, all the weapons are going to be in an internal cargo bay, so you don't have less stuff for radar to ping off of. For your air-to-air weapons, an AMRAAM, for example, I think that's part of the weapons, the standard weapons complement. There again, that's a missile that's traveling three times the speed of your aircraft, and that's able to hit somebody way out on the horizon, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then with the sensors we have, we can pass such great information to that weapon. And not only that, but when we can verify when that weapon impacts, and we won't even, they won't even know we're there, as I said before. So you're exactly right. Because of our stealth, we carry a lot internally. So basically we carry all of our stores, all of our weapons internally. But that does not mean that we cannot carry stuff externally. So if needed, and the situation does not call for stealth, there is capabilities, especially in the future, that we can load up weapons on our wings and basically just carry our payload just increases that much.
Now, I'm an old school kind of guy, Major. Does it have a gun?
It does have a gun.
Okay. As long as there's a gun, I'm happy.
That's what we say. We all like shooting the gun, so having a gun is good.
Now, one of the, again, you talk about situational awareness. You've got 360-degree, you see the old World War II movies, and the pilot's kind of craning to see the bad guy on his six. Your plane is now doing that for you, correct? And not only is it identifying what's out there, but it prioritizes the threats as well?
Absolutely. So in terms of the 360-degree view, we have a system called the Distributed Aperture System, which is basically six cameras placed around the aircraft. And that signal, those cameras, go right into my helmet. And so I can really look down right through the bottom of the plane. I can see the ground. I can look behind me and basically see the ground. I can see anything I need. So the situational awareness is a huge increase. But with that, because this plane has so many sensors, you hit it exactly right. The plane is a thinking computer for us, and it actually will prioritize what we see. There's computers in there that do a whole lot of thinking that people a lot smarter than me made. And it basically tells me what the priorities are out there, and it will display it to me such as that.
Now, is this, and I'm glad you brought that up, because let me also discount another thing you might read on the conspiracy websites. F-35 pilots are not required to have a port installed in the rear of their skull, correct, to plug directly into the plane?
That is 100% true. I'm not sure if my wife would have signed off on that one.
Come on, folks. There's no reason we can't have fun with this. But let's talk about the helmet. I mean, this thing looks like something out of Star Wars. If you can describe to us, how sophisticated is this helmet, and how is it different than, say, some of the other helmets or some of the other systems being used in the like an F-16 or an A-10?
Well, the first big thing is that the F-35 is the only plane that has actually had the helmet designed when the aircraft was designed. Every other plane, it's basically been the technology came to and they retrofitted all the other planes. This plane was designed specifically for the helmet to be a sensor, and that's really what this helmet is. It's a sensor. It's more than just a helmet. It has all of our navigational information that legacy aircraft get from heads-up displays or HUDs. We have that embedded. It has our night vision cameras, so no longer do we use night vision goggles. We actually have a camera on the helmet that we can just flip a switch. It'll turn our night vision camera on, and it'll display on our visor. As we just talked about with the distributed aperture system, it will display those cameras to us in our helmet as well, and then it gives us a whole lot of flexibility when we're targeting what we like to call targeting off bore sight, so off the nose, basically looking at our 3 o'clock or our 9 o'clock. We have the ability to target both things air-to-air and air-to-ground, so it is a huge step up. The technology is awesome in the helmet.
Now, just to clarify, sir, so what I think I understood you saying is with this aircraft, you don't have to have the nose pointed at the target.
That's correct. So we can look. We can basically see everything we need to see in the helmet. So if you just think about it, every time we move the helmet, all the symbology and everything we have goes with us. And that doesn't even, if we're looking at the cameras, it's actually pretty neat. So when we're looking at the cameras and I move just along the horizon, it'll transition from camera to camera for me automatically. So it is just a pure picture of what we're seeing outside. And the same goes with targeting stuff on the ground and targeting enemies in the air.
So if you've got a bad guy coming up behind you, do you just find it in your helmet and say, okay, Hal, shoot that one?
You know, it's not that simple, but we have a bunch of sensors on this jet that all work in unison to basically give us the situational awareness we need and help us in the targeting process of either air to air or air to ground.
Okay, and so that, wow. I wish we had more time with you, Major. Let's get down to the brass tacks. How many hours do you have in the F-35 currently?
I'm currently about 250 hours in it.
So, based on your experience in F-16s, I mean, just how cool is it flying this aircraft?
It's awesome. It's basically like flying a sports car with two iPads in front of you, all touchscreen. I mean, it is amazing. Just the amount of information this plane gives you. And I can give you actually an example. So when I flew F-16s, I love F-16s. They're always the first plane I flew. I had the capability to have two displays up at one time. So I had two screens and I had two displays up. In this plane, the F-35, I can have 12 screens up at one time, all doing separate things. And that's really where the computers come into play, because every system is looking at different things. And the plane is all running this autonomously while I am sitting there flying and making the decisions. It's phenomenal to step up in technology we have.
I have trouble just wrapping my head around that.
I know. Same with me. I mean, sometimes it's overwhelming, and that is one of the big things. Flying this plane is very easy. Just the stick and throttle flying this plane, they made it very easy. Really what we teach when we teach people how to fly this plane is how to read the sensors, how basically to time manage all the sensors and all the information you're getting from this plane. And once again, the plane does a great job of really computing all that for us, giving us a picture so we can go ahead as the pilots and make the decisions that we need.
Now, Major, I'm glad you brought that up. We've got about 2 minutes before the next break, but you hear the word interoperability in reference to this aircraft so often. I'm guessing all those screens have to do with that. Could you explain to our listeners what that means and why that's so important and why that's so different with the F-35?
Yeah, so interoperability, really, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as the plane itself and what I really just talked about, how it's able to process all this information. But the whole idea, once again, we know we're not going to be the only game in town out there. So this plane is designed to talk to every other plane out there. And the information that we're getting, that information, we can send it out to other planes in the air, and that just opens their eyes in terms of what's going on in the battle space. Because just the things we can see are just amazing, and things that other aircraft just can't see just due to the upgrade in our sensors. So that's really where we earn our money.
Okay, and you, just coming back to our next guest, you'll be flying F-35s are sort of making their debut in the air show arena, if you will, correct? Will your Heritage conference be the first demonstration flight for the F-35 for the general public?
It will be. Actually, this is the first year the F-35 is going to be debuted in a formal air show schedule. We've been in air shows throughout the past year or two, basically doing a lot of static, but this will be the first time that we're there with the sole purpose to fly. We'll be down in Tucson. My team and I are ecstatic to be down there for the first time to build the F-35 Heritage Flight Team. And it's going to be a real honor to fly with the past in terms of the warbirds, a lot of the present aircraft, the F-22 and the F-16, and then also we like to think kind of looking to the future, which is really what the F-35 brings to the table.
Well, Major, we're thrilled to see you here. I'm glad to have you on the radio show here talking about the F-35. Listen, because you're coming from Luke and Phoenix, you probably haven't really tasted good Mexican food, so if you need to make some recommendations when you come down, sir, I'm happy to do that.
No problem. Like I said, you'll be on my speed dial.
Okay. Major William Andrada, the F-35 Heritage Flight pilot, joining us here. Folks, stick around. We're going to be talking about the Heritage Flight and the Davis-Monthan Open House with Lieutenant Sidney Smith when we come right back. Stick around. Mm-hmm.
expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller-Garcet, here on American Warrior. We just talked with Major William Drail Andreotta, who is an F-35 pilot for the first, well, technically, I guess, the first time in public. F-35s will be flying over the skies of Tucson coming up the first week of March. To talk a little bit more about that and some other very cool things coming up at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, my favorite time of the year every other year is the open house that Davis-Monthan has out at the Air Force Base. So, Lieutenant Cindy Smith, Public Affairs Officer from Davis-Monthan, welcome to American Warrior.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate you keeping me on. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, shucks. It's just two people chatting. Now, you're an Air Force Academy graduate?
I am. I just graduated in May.
So is Davis-Monthan your first posting, your first assignment?
It is. It's my very first duty station, and honestly, I don't want to leave whenever my time comes up to go to my next assignment. I love it here. I love the heat. I love the culture so far, so I'm quickly falling in love with you.
Well, you're probably not surprised that we hear that quite a bit. People come here and they want to stick around, but your duties will call you elsewhere eventually. Now, where are you from originally? Are you from the West that you enjoy the heat, or...?
I'm from a little bit of everywhere. My parents were both in the Air Force, so okay. We moved around a lot when I was little. But I like to call Mississippi home. That's the longest I've lived anywhere was in Mississippi. So I think that's probably where my love of the heat came from.
And well, it's a different hot. You'll find that out. You'll find
that
out very soon. So, Lieutenant, talking about the F-35, some of our listeners may not understand, there is a kind of when the air show season begins, if you will, there's a little get-together that pilots come down and they practice training together. And you've got everything from the F-35 and the F-22, which are fifth generations, the most advanced aircraft flying in the world, all the way down to a P-51, which is a World War II vintage aircraft. Tell our listeners about the Heritage Flight Conference and what will take place when that's here in Tucson.
Sure. So the Heritage Flight Training and Certification course is going to take place on March 3rd through 6th. So you might start seeing some of the aircraft come in March 1st and 2nd, and then they should all be on their way out about March 7th. So this is really the big kickoff event for all the events that we have coming up. We have the Air Force Regional Band that's coming in town, and then we have, as you know, the open house on March 12th and 13th. So with Heritage Flight specifically, it raises public awareness about the Air Force mission, and it really is a good chance to commemorate our history because we have the most advanced aircraft flying with some of our older ones that are still up and running, like the P-47, the P-40, P-51, and then, like you mentioned, the F-35 and the F-22, and they fly in formation together. So it's just the coolest visual image of our history and where we came from and where we're going.
And, folks, if you go to the Davis-Monthan website, I think you can probably find some images, or if you just Google Heritage Flight, and it really is amazing. For example, the lieutenant here, it's radio, so you can't see it. She's got a photo, looks like an F-16, maybe an F-86 Sabre, a P-51, and maybe two P-51s, but you've literally got different generations of aircraft. And, Sydney, what's interesting to me is you see the flights in the past, and it's almost like the F-16 has got their nose up and they're throttling way, way back just to keep information with, some of their ancestors that aren't able to achieve quite as much speed.
Exactly. It's really impressive what they're able to do is to balance out the capabilities just for this kind of a flight to stay in formation together.
Now, folks, before you get in your car or try and get a base pass, just be aware that the Heritage Conference is not open to the public. Your air show is coming up, ladies and gentlemen, but if you do want to see the Heritage Conference, I know folks sometimes go down and they park off the end of the runway or, out there on Alvernon or down on Valencia. These aircraft will be performing. They'll be able to see them over the base, but the footprint, if you will, if that's the right term, they'll just be flying directly over Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. They won't be generally going out over the community like in the traditional open house, correct?
I'm not sure exactly the limits of the airspace that they'll be flying in, but I think if you just live in Tucson and you're able to look up outside of your backyard, you should be able to catch a glimpse.
And it's a thrill. As I mentioned to Major Andreotta, the first time I saw an F-22 fly, and I'd played the computer game forever because I'm kind of a geek, but actually seeing it fly in the air, it's hard to it's, you have to see it. It's hard to fathom. I mean, the things these aircraft can do are just truly, truly amazing. And then, of course, as a history buff, being able to see, or more importantly, hear a P-51 with probably one of the sweetest sounding engines ever in an aircraft go by, just a true joy. So, Lieutenant, so for the general public, Thunder and Lightning over Arizona, the open house, as you call it, is coming up. What are the dates of that again?
March 12th and 13th. Our gates will open at about 9 in the morning, so if you want to get there first thing, that's the best time to get there. And it's really an all-day event, so I think it'll probably end at about 5 at night is whenever it'll start wrapping up. But it's a free event, free admission, free parking, so we'll have plenty of opportunities to buy food and water out there, but really you could not spend a cent, and you can come out all day and hang out with us.
And this really, this is such a joy because this is one of the things that I believe, among all the things that Davis-Monthan does and the airmen do to give back to our community, I believe the open house is sort of the culmination of those relationships where you have folks actually be able to come together in one place and not only enjoy some time with the airmen out of Davis-Monthan Air Force, but to get to see some of the very, very cool things. Now, we'll get into a little bit about the very cool aircraft folks will be able to see while they're out there. But very quickly, just because it is an Air Force base, and I know we're all taxpayers, but if you don't mind, there's some things that some definite don'ts if people are deciding to come out to the air show. And literally, that attracts hundreds of thousands of people from throughout, maybe throughout the whole Western United States. So there'll be lots of folks out there. But what are the basics, some of the things that folks need to be aware of? Don't try bringing this onto the base or bring it out to the air show.
That's right. We do have a full list on our website, dm.af.mil, that you can see all the things that we're going to ask everyone not to bring in. But just some of the more common things would be backpacks. If you have large duffel bags, if you could leave those at home, you'll be allowed to bring a small clutch just to keep the basics, your phone, your wallet. And you can bring diaper bags if you have small children. So pets, service animals will be allowed. But as far as the rest of your pets, those will probably have to stay at home too. Bicycles, scooters, remote aircraft, hoverboards. I know those are a new popular thing now. But just for the safety of everyone, we want to make sure that people leave those things.
Yeah, folks, just use some common sense. I kind of chuckle that you actually have to put remote aircraft on this list, but I can imagine somebody wanting to bring out their little, you know, GoPro camera on a whatever. So, yeah, don't bring that along. Obviously, don't bring any weapons. I know we're a constitutional carry state, but don't bring that onto an Air Force base. Now, they can bring, as you mentioned, if somebody wheelchairs, if they're handicapped or they've got some physical limitations, purses, strollers for children. On the service animals, do they need to check in with your office first or someone first before they do that? Or
that's a good question, but as long as they have the right documentation, as long as they're wearing whatever certification they need, that should be fine.
Okay, and binoculars, cameras, okay?
Yep, that's right. Cameras are good. We'll be taking pictures out there too, but we're excited to give you all the opportunity to get something as well.
That, for me, that's the best part of the show, other than getting to meet the airmen themselves. Now, there are some options. You mentioned that the show is free of charge, but if people are like me and they really want to geek out, there are some other options where they can purchase. You've got the Flight Line Club. There's a beer garden going to be going on out there, and they can actually purchase some premium box seats, if I'm not mistaken. What sort of walk us through, we've got about 2 minutes, what are those options for folks who really, really want to get up close and personal?
So these are some more specialized options that you can pay for. So you do have to pay for those tickets, and there are a limited amount. So you can go to the website thunderandlightningoverarizona.com, and it'll give you all the options to get those tickets and to see all the different benefits that you can get, like specialized seating and, like you mentioned, the areas where you can get maybe a better look at some of the aircraft.
And in my mind, two of the most important things, because you are going to have 300,000 people at an Air Force base, if you buy one of these special passes, you get private restrooms. That's really important to me. But,
yes,
you know, you're out there.
I'm not
there,
sure
so
exactly what that entails yet, but I've heard that upgraded restrooms is,
yes,
part of the package.
It means
so
you probably don't have to wait in line. You get to, folks, it's a great time. You get to eat. But more importantly, you're out of the sun. And one of the things I'd highly recommend the Dew brings, please wear, you know, a hat, bring some sunscreen. It does tend to get pretty warm out there. Every year you see that the C-5 or some of the larger aircraft tend to get really popular in the afternoon because folks want to get up under the wings to get out of the shade. So make sure you pack and plan for a day in the sun when you're coming out there. But don't bring umbrellas. Again, common sense. These are aircraft that have engines, and we don't want anything getting sucked up into the engine that wouldn't be, you know, don't bring balloons, even if it's someone's birthday or something like that. So if you go to the website that was mentioned there, the Flight Line Club, tickets are $125 a person or $135 at the gate when you get there. The beer garden, which is always just a good time, nice tent. You can bring your food in there. That's $30 per person, and the premium box seats are $20. So, folks, check that out. If you're looking at, and please, you know, if you're looking to go to the air show, check out those things. Lieutenant, who is your featured? Now, I want to talk a little bit about the static displays and kind of geek out, but really sort of the highlight of your show is going to be whom?
The U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds.
Probably, well, with all due deference to my Navy friends out there, one of the best performing aerial demonstration teams in the world, correct?
That's right. They are world famous, and I've seen them a couple times myself. They were actually at my graduation at the Air Force Academy in May, so I just saw them pretty recently, and they are breathtaking every time they perform.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Thunderbirds alone are worth the price of admission, and guess what? It's free, so you're not paying anything. Hey, stick around, folks. We're going to talk more with the Lieutenant about thunder and lightning over Arizona. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back after these messages. Hey, like us on Facebook, American Warrior Daily Mail.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Your host here, Ben Bueller Garcia on American Warrior Radio. I'm joined in studio by Lieutenant Cindy Smith, who is with the Public Affairs Office at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, her very first posting out of the Air Force Academy. She's lucky enough to land right here in Tucson, Arizona. So, Lieutenant, we're talking about all the great stuff that the Air Force has got. And, you know, we're talking offline, and you really, when I asked you, what do you really want to emphasize, and you mentioned the fact that these are great opportunities for Davis-Monthan in particular and the Air Force to give back to the citizens of Tucson. I could see you feel very strongly about that. Tell us a little bit more about why you think these sorts of things are important for these kinds of relationships.
Well, you hit it right on the head there. This is probably one of the most supportive military communities that I've ever been in. Even since I was a kid and moving around to different Air Force bases, I have to say Tucson has shown amazing support. Even whenever I'm just out in uniform, going to pick up some groceries, I always have, I think, at least three people come up and say thank you for your service. And I think that's just another one of the many reasons why I love it here. So with our open house and air show, this is our big chance as your Air Force base to give back and to say thank you up close for all that you all do to support us. Come see us, come meet us, and we want to say thank you on our home turf too.
Now, I want to get back and geek out on these planes a little bit, but there's also something you mentioned. Before I was a plane nerd, I also was a musician. Big surprise, nerd, huh? But you've got a couple of concerts coming up. The Air Force Band of the Golden West will be performing here in Tucson. Tell us a little bit about that band and maybe some of the stuff folks might be able to hear or will hear with them.
That's right. So our regional band, the Band of the Golden West, is coming March 7th, March 8th, and March 11th to the Tucson area at Santa Rita High School Auditorium, Saurita Auditorium, and that's also going to be another free event. So it's just another thing in our succession of big Air Force events coming up in March that you can go to get a little taste of Air Force culture.
And I tell you, one of my greatest joys is hearing these Air Force bands. They are truly high-quality performers. A nice mix of music, everything from probably, John Philip Sousa to more contemporary things, swing. It's a great night, folks. March 8th and 9th, 7 p.m., both those shows. They are free of charge, so make sure you put those on your calendar and check them out as well. Now, Lieutenant, back to the aircraft. You are not just, you mentioned the Thunderbirds, which is just, in and of itself, is an amazing performance to watch. You'll also have other aerial demonstration and performers, but let's talk about just some of the static displays. Folks heard the interview with the F-35 pilot. We pretty sure there'll be an F-35 on static display. Folks, they can't get up and touch it, but they'll be able to see it from a distance, I'm guessing.
That's right. So all these static displays, we have such an incredible range, everything from trainer aircraft to cargo to our fighters, and like you mentioned, the F-35. And you'll be able to get pretty close to these. You'll be able to talk to some of the crews that are with them and learn a little bit more about your favorite aircraft, see those up close. So that was always one of my favorite parts of air shows growing up as a kid, is that you get to see the planes right there on the ground.
And we're, you know, Tucson is famous. If you've been in Tucson any length of time, you know about the Pima Air and Space Museum, one of the best air museums on the planet. This open house, though, you know, we mentioned the F-35, the most advanced aircraft in the world right now, but you'll also have a World War I SE-5. I mean, this is came in just after the Sopwith Camel in the First World War. There are only 77 of the original SE-5s ever manufactured. You're going to have one on display at this air show. So we go everything from World War I on up to the future of air power.
That's right, and I think that's the coolest part. If you want a full list of the aircraft, you can go see that on our website, dm.af.mil, and we're updating that constantly as we're getting that list finalized of who's going to come visit us down at Davis-Monthan, and we hope that you'll be able to see your favorite out there.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had the Vice Commander of Air Force Special Operations Command on American Warrior, and we were talking a little bit about one of my other favorite aircraft, the AC-130 gunship. You've got one of the AC-130 versions will be on static display out there. People can come out and see what a flying tank literally looks like. On up to the C-5 Galaxy, which is the largest cargo plane operated by the United States Air Force. And I don't know if you've been on one of these, Lieutenant, but they are huge.
I have. They're massive. It's amazing whenever you look at it that it can get off the ground.
You know, my dad is an engineer, and I remember the first time we went through the C-5, you had it opened up, so folks kind of went through like a gate into the air show, and he kind of chuckled and says, boy, I would have loved to be a fly on the wall when that engineer first went to someone and said, yes, well, this thing will fly. We'll get it up in the air. So, I mean, that can carry two Abrams tanks, 16 Humvees, big, big aircraft.
That's right.
Definitely worth seeing. And also, hey, great wings to get up under the shade. I mentioned the AC-130. You'll have some unmanned aerial vehicles there, the MQ-1 and the MQ-9, the Reaper and the Predator. Again, you know, some may consider that the future of air warfare. The folks will be able to actually take a look at them and see it, not up close and personal, but get a sense of the perspective of what those things look like. And then probably, I think, one of the most beautiful aircraft ever, the B-1B Lancer bomber will be out there on static display as well. So how, which, bless you, it's live radio, our producer just sneezed, bless you, Rhea. One thing I didn't see on the list, but is worth mentioning, wear comfortable shoes. I mean, this is a lot of stuff scattered over a large area, correct?
It's a pretty long area that we're setting up everything out on the flight lane. So just a couple things that I would recommend bringing if this is your first air show, if you're not familiar with what this looks like, is sunscreen, sunglasses, earplugs for the kids, and some comfortable walking shoes. If you've got a Fitbit, I know those are the new thing right now to track your steps, you will get in a lot of steps whenever you come.
Now, one other thing just to mention, said don't bring out an ice chest. It's a day-long event. It's a family event. But you can't just pack up a picnic lunch and bring it out to the base. So there'll be plenty of opportunities. There's ATMs there. Folks can get a little extra cash if they need it. But I think it's important, unless it's changed, Lieutenant, there will be lots of food and other things available for folks. And many of the units or the squadrons at the base use this as sort of a fundraiser to support their airmen by selling stuff at the show. Is that still accurate or don't know yet?
There are going to be a ton of different vendors that are selling all kinds of food and different kind of drinks, so you don't have to worry about trying to pack up your own stuff for the whole day. We're going to make sure that you're taken care of and that you're able to stay out there all day if you want to.
One other thing that's very important, because this is some clarification, on the don't do list, you ask that people not wear military uniforms if they're not active duty members of the military.
That's right.
And that's just to avoid confusion. I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on out there, and we need to know who's official and who's not, correct?
That's right. It's going to be a huge event, a lot going on, and we want to make sure that, just like you said, that people know if they're trying to look for a military member, if there's a safety concern, if there's someone just needs to ask a question, they know the right person to go to.
Okay, and as folks are going out there and planning the day, the two entrances will be both the Craycroft and the Swan Gate?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, and please, folks, carpool, because it's going to get really crowded out there. So I think generally you're going to let folks in. They'll probably park in an area and a bus will load them up and take them closer to the flight line, or they can just walk it if they're feeling very fit.
Exactly. If you want to get even more steps on that Fitbit, then you can walk, but we will have a shuttle service that's going from the parking lots over to the flight line area.
And ladies and gentlemen, don't miss this if you haven't been. I think I've been to almost every open house DM has had, and I still get a kick out of it every time. You mentioned World War One aircraft. You got some the P-51, one of my favorite aircraft from World War Two. You're actually going to have a German Jungmann, which was a 1930s biplane trainer used by the Luftwaffe, before the Second World War. Harriers, the famous jump jets. There's a British Lightning that's a Cold War airplane. Just a lot of very cool. I mean, you can spend the whole day keeping your eyes on the ground looking at there, but then, of course, you're going to want to look up and see the Thunderbirds. What are some of the other aerial demonstration teams you'll have performing throughout the day?
So besides the Thunderbirds, which are amazing in and of themselves, we will also have our own resident units doing a demonstration for you all, our Desert Lightning team. So you'll be able to see what our planes at Davis-Monthan do and what they train for every day, and that'll be the best part. But the other cool thing about this is that it's such a family-friendly event, is mm-hmm. that there will be a kid zone with bouncy castles for kids. If you have someone who's in high school who's thinking about what they want to do with their career and their future, then this is a good chance to give them a look at what they could be a part of.
Okay. Well, so basically, bottom line, it's going to be fun. Come out and do it.
Exactly.
And again, the dates and the times, the gates open at 9 on both Saturday and Sunday. The aerial demonstrations begin approximately 1100 hours,
yes,
11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're a long time Tucsonan, some folks just go up on the roof and watch the air show. I know when the Thunderbirds fly, they're pretty much all over the valley. Most of the real cool stuff happens over the runway there at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. So people will be able to look up and see different things going on over the skies of Tucson. Also, Heritage Conference coming up the week prior to that. You'll get to see some really, really cool aircraft over the skies of Tucson, including the F-35 and the F-22, the most advanced planes in the world, flying with World War II aircraft, Vietnam-era aircraft. Just a wonderful time here in Tucson coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to do that. Really quickly, Lieutenant, one other thing that I should have mentioned, we do have a lot of business owners, supporters that listen to this show. Are there still opportunities to sponsor or advertise or otherwise financially support the open house? Because this doesn't come out of DM's budget, correct? I mean, the Air Force...
That's a good question. I'm not. I know it's Air
Force
sponsored.
It does,
it's what we sponsor. But if you want to come out and you want to have a booth, if you have a food truck that you want to get out there, the best way to do that is to email us at 355wgpa@us.af.mil, and we can get you more information. Or you can call our number at 520-228-3406. And we can let you know about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't miss it. Lieutenant, welcome to Tucson. Welcome to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. And thanks for coming on American Warrior Radio. I hope you had a good time.
I did. I love it here so far and love the show.
Any other messages you want to send to the listeners out there?
Sure. March 12th and 13th. Don't miss it. Gates open at 9. Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Can't wait to see you.
And the concerts, March 8th and 9th also. The U.S. Air Force Band of the Golden West performing free of charge. Both at Santa Rita High School as well as the Sahuarita Auditorium down further south of us in Sahuarita, Arizona. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Podcast of this show, if you want to share it, can be found at 1041kqth.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, American Warrior Daily Mail, and follow us on our Twitter feed, Warrior Radio TUC. This has been your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.